Hi, sweetie.
We're on to chapter 8, part 2 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. And I think last time, Crookshanks got at Scabbers, so Hermione's kind of mad at Ron, and vice versa. Ron was still in a bad mood with Hermione the next day. He barely talked to her all through Herbology, even though he, Harry, and Hermione were all working together on the same Puff-a-Pot. "How's Scabbers?" Hermione asked timidly as they stripped fat pink pods from the plants and emptied the shining beans into a wooden pail. "He's hiding in the bottom of my bed, shaking," said Ron angrily, missing the pail and scattering beans all over the greenhouse.
"Weasley, careful, Weasley!"
cried Professor Sprout as the beans burst into bloom before their very eyes. They had Transfiguration next. Harry, who had resolved to ask Professor McGonagall after the lesson whether he could go into Hogsmeade with the rest, joined the line outside class, trying to decide how he was going to argue his case. He was distracted, however, by a disturbance at the front of the line. Lavender Brown seemed to be crying. Parvati had her arm around her and was explaining something to Seamus Finnegan and Dean Thomas, who were looking very serious. "What's the matter, Lavender?" asked Hermione anxiously as she, Ron, and Harry went to join the group.
"She's got a letter from home this morning," Parvati whispered. "It's a rabbit, Binky. He's been killed by a fox."
"Oh," said Hermione, "I'm sorry, Lavender."
"I should have known," said Lavender tragically. "You know what day it is?" "The 16th of October. That thing you're dreading, it will happen on the 16th of October. Remember? She was right. She was right."
The whole class was gathered around Lavender now. Seamus shook his head seriously. Hermione hesitated. Then she said,
You were dreading Binky being killed by a fox?"
"Well, but not necessarily by a fox," said Lavender, looking up at Hermione with streaming eyes. "But I was obviously dreading him dying, wasn't I?"
"Oh," said Hermione. She paused again. "Then,
was Binky an old rabbit?"
"No," sobbed Lavender. "He was only a baby."
Parvati tightened her arm around Lavender's shoulders.
"But then," said Hermione, "why would you dread him dying?"
Parvati glared at her.
"Well, look at it logically," said Hermione, turning to the rest of the group. "I mean, Binky didn't even die today, did he? Lavender just got the news today." Lavender wailed loudly. "And she can't have been dreading it, because it's come as a real shock."
"Don't mind Hermione, Lavender," said Ron loudly. "She doesn't think other people's pets matter very much."
Professor McGonagall opened the classroom door at that moment, which was perhaps lucky. Hermione and Ron were looking daggers at each other. When they got into class, they seated themselves on either side of Harry and didn't talk to each other for the whole class. So you can tell there's a lot of sexual tension going on here. Harry still hadn't decided what he was going to say to Professor McGonagall when the bell rang at the end of the lesson, but it was she who brought the subject of Hogsmeade first.
"One moment, please," she called as the class made to leave. "As you're all in my house, you should hand Hogsmeade's permission forms to me before Halloween. No forms, no visiting the village, so don't forget."
Neville put up his hand.
"Please, Professor, I think I've lost."
"Your grandmother sent yours to me directly, Longbottom," said Professor McGonagall. "She seemed to think it was safer."
"Well, that's all, you may leave."
"Ask her now," Ron hissed at Harry.
"Oh, but," Hermione began.
"Go for it, Harry," said Ron stubbornly.
Harry waited for the rest of the class to disappear, then headed nervously for Professor McGonagall's desk.
"Yes, Potter?"
Harry took a deep breath.
"Professor, my aunt and uncle forgot to sign my form."
Professor McGonagall looked over her square spectacles at him, but didn't say anything.
"So, do you think it would be all right, it would be okay if I go to Hogsmeade?" Professor McGonagall looked down and began shuffling papers on her desk. "I'm afraid not, Potter," she said. "You heard what I said. No form, no visiting the village. That's the rule." "But, Professor, my aunt and uncle, you know, they're muggles. They don't really understand about Hogwarts forms and stuff," Harry said, while Ron egged him on with vigorous nods. "If you said I could go..." "But I don't say so," said Professor McGonagall, standing up and piling her papers neatly in a drawer. "The form clearly states that the parent or guardian must give permission." She turned to look at him with an odd expression on her face. Was it pity? "I'm sorry, Potter, but that's my final word. You'd better hurry, you'll be late for your next lesson."
There was nothing to be done. Ron called Professor McGonagall a lot of names that greatly annoyed Hermione. Hermione assumed an all-for-the-best expression that made Ron even angrier, and Harry had to endure everyone in the class talking loudly and happily about what they were going to do first once they got into Hogsmeade.
"There's always the feast," said Ron, in an effort to cheer Harry up. "You know, the Halloween feast in the evening."
"Yeah," said Harry gloomily.
"Great."
The Halloween feast was always good, but it would taste a lot better if he was coming to it after a day in Hogsmeade with everyone else. Nothing anyone said made him feel any better about being left behind. Dean Thomas, who was very good with a quill, had offered to forge Uncle Vernon's signature on the form, but as Harry had already told Professor McGonagall he hadn't signed it, it was no good. Ron half-heartedly suggested the invisibility cloak, but Hermione stamped on that one, reminding Ron what Professor Dumbledore had told them about the Dementors being able to see through them. Percy had what were possibly the least helpful words of comfort.
"They make a fuss about Hogsmeade, but I assure you, Harry, it's not all it's cracked up to be," he said seriously. "All right, the sweet shop's rather good, and Zonko's joke shop, frankly, is frankly dangerous, and yes, the Shrieking Shack's always worth a visit. But really, Harry, apart from that, you're not missing anything."
On Halloween morning, Harry awoke. Okay, I guess we can try to finish. On Halloween morning, Harry awoke with the rest and went down to breakfast, feeling thoroughly depressed, though doing his best to act normally. "We'll bring lots of sweets back from Honeydukes," said Hermione, looking desperately sorry for him. "Yeah, loads," said Ron. He and Hermione had finally forgotten their squabble about Crookshanks in the face of Harry's difficulties.
"Oh, don't worry about me," said Harry, in what he hoped was an offhand voice. "I'll see you at the feast. Have a good time."
He accompanied them to the entrance hall, where Filch, the caretaker, was standing inside the front doors, checking off names against the long list, peering suspiciously into every face, and making sure that no one was sneaking out where he shouldn't be going.
"Staying here, Potter?" shouted Malfoy, who was standing in line with Crabbe and Goyle. "Scared of passing the Dementors, are you?"
Harry ignored him and made his solitary way up the marble staircase, through the deserted corridors, and back to Gryffindor Tower.
"Password," said the fat lady, jerking out of a doze.
"Fortuna Major," said Harry listlessly. The portrait swung open, and he climbed through the hole into the common room. It was full of chattering first and second years, and a few older students who had obviously visited Hogsmeade so often that the novelty had worn off.
"Harry! Harry! Hi, Harry!"
It was Colin Creevy, a second year, who was deeply in awe of Harry, and never missed an opportunity to speak at him.
"Aren't you going to Hogsmeade, Harry? Well, why not? Hey!"
Colin looked around eagerly at his friends.
"You can come and sit with us if you like, Harry."
No thanks, Colin," said Harry, who wasn't in the mood to have a lot of people staring avidly at the scar on his forehead. "I've got to go to the library. I've got to get some work done." After that, he had no choice but to turn right around and head back out of the portrait hall.
"What was the point of waking me up?" said the fat lady, grumpily, as he walked away.
Harry wandered dispiritedly toward the library, but halfway there, he changed his mind. He didn't feel like working at all. He turned around and came face to face with Filch, who had obviously just seen off the last of the Hogsmeade visitors.
"What are you doing?"
Filch snarled suspiciously.
Nothing, said Harry, truthfully.
Nothing, spat Filch, his jowls quivering unpleasantly. A likely story, sneaking around on your own. Why aren't you in Hogsmeade buying stilt pellets and belch powder and whizzing worms like the rest of your nasty little friends?
Harry shrugged.
Well, get back to your common room where you belong, snapped Filch, and he stood glaring until Harry had passed out of sight.
But Harry didn't go back to the common room. He climbed a staircase, thinking vaguely of visiting the Owlery to see Hedwig, and was walking along another corridor when a voice from inside one of the rooms said, Harry? Harry doubled back to see who had spoken and met Professor Lupin looking around his office door.
What are you doing? Said Lupin, though in a very different voice from Filch. Where are Ron and Hermione?
Hogsmeade, said Harry in a would-be casual voice.
Ah, said Lupin. He considered Harry for a moment.
Why don't you come in? I've just taken delivery of a Grindylow
for our next lesson.
A what? Said Harry. He followed Lupin into his office. In one quarter stood a very large tank of water. A sickly green creature with sharp little horns had its face pressed against the glass, pulling faces and flexing its long, spindly fingers.
Water demon, said Lupin, surveying the Grindylow thoughtfully. We shouldn't have too much difficulty with him, not after the Kappus. The trick is to break his grip. You notice the abnormally long fingers? Strong, but very brittle.
The Grindylow bared its green teeth and then buried itself in a tangle of weeds in the corner.
Cup of tea, Lupin said, looking around for his kettle. I was thinking of making one.
All right, said Harry awkwardly. Lupin tapped the kettle with his wand, and a blast of steam issued suddenly from the spout.
Sit down, said Lupin, taking the lid off a dusty tin. I've only got tea bags, I'm afraid, but I dare say you've had quite enough of tea leaves.
Harry looked at him. Lupin's eyes were twinkling.
How do you know about that? Harry asked.
Professor McGonagall told me, said Lupin, passing Harry a chipped mug of tea.
You're not worried, are you?
No, said Harry. He thought for a moment of telling Lupin about the dog he'd seen in Magnolia Crescent, but decided not to. He didn't want Lupin to think he was a coward, especially since Lupin already seemed to think he couldn't cope with a Bogart.
Something of Harry's thoughts seemed to have shown on his face, because Lupin said, Anything worrying you, Harry?
No, said Harry lied. He drank a bit of tea and watched the Grindylow brandishing a fist at him.
Yes, he said suddenly, putting his tea down on Lupin's desk. You know that day we fought the Bogart?
Yes, said Lupin slowly.
Why didn't you let me fight it? Said Harry abruptly.
Lupin raised his eyebrows.
I should have thought that was obvious, Harry, he said, sounding surprised.
Harry, who expected Lupin to deny that he'd done any such thing, was taken aback.
Why, he said again.
Well, said Lupin, frowning slightly, I assumed that if the Bogart faced you, it would assume the shape of Lord Voldemort.
Harry stared.
Not only was this the last answer he expected, but Lupin had even said Lord Voldemort's name. The only other person Harry had ever say that name aloud, apart from himself, was Professor Dumbledore.
Clearly I was wrong, said Lupin, still frowning at Harry, but I didn't think it a good idea for Lord Voldemort to materialize in the staff room. I imagined that people would panic.
I didn't think of Voldemort, said Harry honestly. I remembered those Dementors.
I see, said Lupin thoughtfully.
Well, well. You know, I'm impressed.
He smiled slightly at the look of surprise on Harry's face.
That suggests what you fear most of all is fear. Very wise, Harry.
Harry didn't know what to say to that, so he drank some more tea.
So you've been thinking that I didn't believe you capable of fighting the Bogart?
Said Lupin shrewdly.
Well, yeah, said Harry. He was suddenly feeling a lot happier.
Professor Lupin, you know the Dementors.
He was interrupted by a knock on the door.
Come in, said Lupin.
The door opened, and in came Snape. He was carrying a goblet, which was smoking faintly, and stopped at the sight of Harry, his black eyes narrowing. "Ah, Severus," said Lupin, smiling. "Thank you very much. Could you leave it here on the desk for me?" Snape set down the smoking goblet, his eyes wandering between Harry and Lupin. "I was just showing Harry my Grindylow," said Lupin pleasantly, pointing at the tank. "Fascinating," said Snape, without looking at it. "You should drink that directly, Lupin." "Yes, yes, I will," said Lupin. "I made an entire cauldronful," Snape continued. "If you need any more..." "I should probably take some again tomorrow. Thanks very much, Severus," Lupin said. "Not at all," said Snape, but there was a look in his eye Harry didn't like. Harry backed out of the room, but there was... Harry looked curiously at the goblet. Lupin smiled. "Professor Snape has very kindly concocted a potion for me," he said. "I've never been very much of a potion brewer, and this one is particularly complex." He picked up the goblet and sniffed it. "Pity sugar makes it useless," he added, taking a sip and shuddering. "Why?" said Harry. Lupin looked at him and answered the unfinished question.
"I've been feeling a bit off color," he said. "This potion is the only thing that helps. I'm very lucky to be working alongside Professor Snape. There aren't many wizards who are up to making it." Professor Lupin took another sip, and Harry had a crazy urge to knock the goblin out of his hands. Professor Snape's very interested in the dark arts," he blurted out.
"Really?" said Lupin, looking only mildly interested as he took another gulp.
"Some people reckon..." Harry hesitated, then plunged recklessly along. "Some people reckon he'd do anything to get the Defense Against the Dark Arts job." Lupin drained the goblet and pulled a face. "Disgusting," he said. "Well, Harry, I'd better get to work. I'll see you at the feast later." "Right," said Harry, putting down his teacup. The empty goblet was still smoking. "There you go," said Ron. "We got as much as we could carry." A shower of brilliantly colored sweets fell into Harry's lap. It was dusk, and Ron and Hermione had just turned up at the common room, pink-faced from the cold wind, and looking as though they'd had the time of their lives.
"Thanks," said Harry, picking a packet of tiny black pepper imps. "What's Hogsmeade like? Where'd you go?"
"By the sound of it, everywhere. Dervish and Bangas, the Wizarding Equipment Shop, Zonko's Joke Shop, into the Three Broomsticks for foaming mugs of hot butter beer, and many places besides."
"The post office, Harry. About 200 owls, all sitting on shelves, all color-coded, depending on how fast you want your letter to get there. Honeydukes got a new kind of fudge. They were giving out free samples. There's a bit, look. We think we saw an ogre. Honestly, they get all sorts of the Three Broomsticks. Wish we could have brought some butter beer. Really warms you up."
"What did you do?" said Hermione, looking anxious. "Did you get any work done?"
"No," said Harry. "Lupin made me a cup of tea in his office, and then Snape came in. He told them all about the goblet." Ron's mouth fell open.
"Lupin drank it?" he gasped. "Is he mad?"
Hermione checked her watch. "We better go down, you know. The feast will be starting in 5 minutes.
They hurried through the portrait hall and into the crowd, still discussing Snape. "But if he, you know..." Hermione dropped her voice, glancing nervously around. "If he was trying to poison Lupin, he wouldn't have done it in front of Harry."
"Yeah, maybe," said Harry, as they reached the entrance hall and crossed into the great hall. It had been decorated with hundreds and hundreds of candle-filled pumpkins, a cloud of fluttering live bats, and many flaming orange streamers, which were swimming lazily across the stormy ceiling like brilliant water snakes. The food was delicious. Even Hermione and Ron, who were full to bursting with Honeydew's sweets, managed second helpings of everything. Harry kept glancing at the staff table. Professor Lupin looked cheerful, as well as he ever did. And he was talking animatedly to tiny little Professor Flitwick, the charms teacher.
Harry moved his eyes along the table to the place where Snape sat. Was he imagining it, or were Snape's eyes flickering towards Lupin more often than was natural? The feast finished with the entertainment provided by the Hogwarts ghosts. They popped out of the walls and tables to do a bit of formation gliding. Nearly headless Nick, the Gryffindor ghost, had great success with the reenactment of his own botched beheading. It had been such a pleasant evening that Harry's good mood couldn't even be spoiled by Malfoy, who shouted through the crowd as they all left the hall, "The Dementors send their love, Potter!" Harry, Ron, and Hermione followed the rest of the Gryffindors along the usual path to Gryffindor Tower. But when they reached the corridor that ended with the portrait of the Fat Lady, they found it jammed with students. "Why isn't anyone going in?" said Ron curiously. Harry peered over the heads in front of him. The portrait seemed to be closed.
"Let me through, please," came Percy's voice, and he came bustling importantly through the crowd. "What's the hold up here? You can't all have forgotten the password. Excuse me, I'm head boy." And then a silence fell over the crowd. From the front first, so that a chill seemed to spread down the corridor. They heard Percy say suddenly in a sharp voice, "Somebody get Professor Dumbledore, quick." People's heads turned. Those at the back were standing on tiptoes. "What's going on?" said Ginny, who had just arrived. A moment later, Professor Dumbledore was there, sweeping toward the portrait. The Gryffindors squeezed together to let him through, and Harry, Ron, and Hermione moved closer to see what the trouble was. "Oh my!" Hermione grabbed Harry's arm. The Fat Lady had vanished from her portrait, which had been slashed so viciously that strips of canvas littered the floor. Great chunks of it had been torn away completely. Dumbledore took one quick look at the ruined painting and turned his eyes somber to see Professors McGonagall, Lupin, and Snape hurrying towards him. "We need to find her," said Dumbledore. "Professor McGonagall, please go to Mr. Filch's office at once and tell him to search every painting in the castle for the Fat Lady."
"You'll be lucky," said a cackling voice.
It was Peeves, the poltergeist, bobbling over the crowd and looking delighted as he always did at the sight of wreckage or worry.
"What do you mean, Peeves?" said Dumbledore calmly, and Peeves' grin faded a little. He didn't dare taunt Dumbledore. Instead, he adopted an oily voice that was no better than cackle.
"Ashamed, your headship, sir? Doesn't want to be seen. She's a horrible mess. Saw her running through the landscape up on the fourth floor, sir, dodging between the trees. Crying something dreadful," he said happily. "Poor thing," he added unconvincingly.
"Did she say who did it?" said Dumbledore quietly.
"Oh, yes, Professor Head," said Peeves, with the air of one cradling a large bombshell in his arms. "He got very angry when she wouldn't let him in, you see." Peeves flipped over and grinned at Dumbledore from behind his own legs. "Nasty temper he's got, that Sirius Black." And that's the end of Chapter 8. And next we'll read Chapter 9 called Grim Defeat. I hope you like that, Boo, and I hope it's not too suspenseful because you already know what happens. I love you so much. I'm going to try calling you. I hope you pick up because I want to say goodnight to you. But if not, I love you so much. You're my sweetheart. Goodnight, sweetie. I can't wait to see you also before you go. I want to tell you that you're the sweetest girl in the world. And I love you so much. And when I see you on Friday, I'm going to give you so many kisses. It's not even funny. So, I love you. Goodnight.